The Portland Underground, more commonly referred to as the Shanghai Tunnels, is a network of underground tunnels that is said to be the most haunted place in the city and one of the most haunted places in the entire country. Now, even if you don't believe in ghosts, the terrifying history of this place will send chills down your spine. Located beneath the streets of Portland's Old Town District, these tunnels are said to have been a hotspot for illegal activity, including Shanghaiing, the act of kidnapping people and selling them into slavery as crewmen on departing ships. Built as a way to transport supplies directly from ships to businesses, the tunnels connected downtown Portland to the Willamette River. Some of the bars on the street above had trap doors that opened up to the tunnels. It is said that unaware customers were sometimes drugged and then dropped through the trap doors down into the tunnels, where they were held before taken to the river and sold onto ships as slaves. All of these years later, the tunnels are said to be haunted by the ghosts of the tunnel's many victims. Visitors have claimed to hear disembodied screams and groans, feeling the eerie sensation that someone was standing right behind them, and even seeing the apparition of one ghost in particular who goes by the name of Nina.
Nina.
Now that is one of the most haunted places in America. For those of you who listened to last week's podcast, we stated that we would each bring to the table what we thought was the most haunted place in America, and we talk about it. So we don't know what the other person picked. Now, the Portland Tunnels is not the place that I pick. I just thought it'd make for a cool intro. But it is one of the places I consider because it is considered to be like very, very haunted. And the negative energy in that place must be off the PKE meter, Ghostbusters reference. You have people who were kidnapped and sold into slavery through this network of secret tunnels under a city. That's absolutely crazy. But that's not the place that I picked. I picked a different place. A place that I feel is just more terrifying than that, for reasons I'll get into later. So, this quad two, the scariest places or the most haunted places in America, ladies.
The spookiest of the dookiest.
Who wants to go foist?
I'll let somebody else go first.
Voiced.
Well, I'll go first.
Okay.
So the place I picked may seem like one obvious choice, but I have a true life account of being at this place.
Okay. Interesting.
So the place I chose is Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
Now I've been to Savannah, I think, how many times? I've only been there twice. But the last time I went, some crazy stuff kind of happened. So I'm going to read what happened. And part of this is from me talking about it. The other part is my cousin, her experience. So we rented an Airbnb. It was very nice. Had a pool in the back. We didn't even get in. Plenty of bedroom space and was decorated very nicely. So I will say when we first got there, we somewhat had kind of like a spooky feeling when we first got there, to the point where, so there were the Airbnb was three levels, and there was one bedroom on the first floor, two on the second floor, and then a bedroom on the top floor that had three bedrooms. Nobody wanted the bedroom on the first floor because we were all like, I don't really want to stay on the first floor by myself.
Yeah.
So nobody picked that room. None of us wanted to be on the first floor because, like I said, nobody wanted to be down there by themselves, and it was right by the front door. So we went out that night and we had dinner. We had some drinks, quite a few. And then we came back to the Airbnb. Everybody was just hanging out. So me and my two cousins were sharing the bedroom on the top floor. So I'll mention that I already had somewhat of an uneasy feeling about that room, because it just felt kind of damp and dark, and it just, I don't know, like I didn't want to stay in the room on the first floor by myself. So I was like, well, I'll share the room with you guys. But then I got up there and I was like, I don't, it
had
just
that classic attic feel.
Yeah, like something just didn't feel right. So anyway, so we were all just up. It was probably like 2 or 3 in the morning. So my cousin, she laid down in her bed for a minute. Now she said So she intended to take a nap, but she ended up falling asleep. So as she was sleeping, so this is what she told me. She says, so as she was sleeping, she could feel herself waking up. But at some point while she was laying there, she said she felt someone get in the bed with her. Like she said, it felt like somebody got in the bed.
Oh, hell no. Mm-mm.
And so then she said, she could feel like almost like it was laying on her. And she said she couldn't move. It was almost like it felt like somebody was just laying on top of her. Mm-mm. So then she said she couldn't say anything. So she said then she started saying, in the name of Jesus, in the name of Jesus, in the name of Jesus. Because she said she thought to herself, okay, this might be the only way I can get whatever this is off of me. Because she said she just kept like trying to say something. She said she could hear, because me and my other cousin were awake.
Yeah.
She said she could hear us talking, but she couldn't say anything to us. Now, what's crazy is, obviously, I was awake and I remember this happening. And when I didn't know what she was saying, but I could hear her saying something, but it wasn't in her voice. It was like,
what?
It was like, if she was saying it in the name of Jesus, like, in the name of Jesus. Like, it was like a weird voice. And I was like,
no!
But I wasn't like, I wasn't like freaked out, but I was just kind of like, is she talking in her sleep?
Yeah.
And so then finally, like, she woke up and I was just like, were you talking in your sleep? She was like, you guys, oh my God. And so she like told us what happened and we were like, what? So, she also told me that she knows someone that she shared that experience with them when she went to Savannah, and the person told them that they went to Savannah and the exact same thing happened to them. And so the funny thing is, my cousin goes to Savannah. Prior to that, she used to go to Savannah all the time. It's like one of her favorite places to go. Now she's like, I do not ever want to go there again.
Really? Oh no, she's traumatized.
Yeah. And she said if she does, because I think that night we ended up doing like a haunted tour or one. And you know, those things are kind of cheesy. They're like, oh, that building's haunted.
Here's the history of this building. Yeah.
But she was like, I'm never doing anything like that again. So I'm like, yeah, like I like Savannah, but just like everywhere you go, even if it's not a haunted tour, you're just going to dinner, like everything just has like this really like, to me, an eerie like.
It, you feel the history there,
yeah.
Right?
Like, because like I said, even this Airbnb, it was super nice. It was like it had like this little pool in the back. We were like, oh, we're getting in this pool. But it was just like.
I stayed there.
It feels scary.
I stayed there a few times before, and there was the first time that I ever went. We stayed in this really old, old hotel. Like you could feel it was like 150 plus years. You know, like everything was just all like hardwood kind of deal. And I remember we could hear like a screaming baby in the middle of the night, but that could have easily been other guests. But
it's a ghost baby.
Maybe. But I did, like, I was starting to think maybe it was haunted because in the middle you could hear creaking floorboards like all night, which it's like, I doubt every single guest upstairs is walking around at night. You know, like it just gave me that vibe. And like you said, like just walking around the city because everything looks very old. Mm-hmm. It just gives you that feeling like, damn, what am I walking into right now? It just feels like the air feels heavy anyway because it's humid as hell. But it just, you know, it just feels like you feel all the energy from all the years past there. It's weird.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Southern cities are like the, you know, they say Savannah is the most haunted city in America,
right,
along with New Orleans and Salem for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I think if you think about what happened in the South.
Yeah.
Slavery. So you have, I mean, you have this cloud of negative energy that, by the way, has never completely dissipated in the the almost 200 years that slavery has been abolished. So you have that, plus a lot of Civil War battles were there. So, you just throw some more dead people. And then you have your typical, murders and crimes and things. I just think in the South, there's just a ton of negative energy. Now, I'm not saying that none of those things happen in the North or out West. Mm-hmm. The context are different. But I do think, the transatlantic slave trade, the American South being the epicenter of that, at least in Western society for so long, has got to contribute to. Before the podcast started, we were talking about Candyman. I mean, in the movie Candyman, you know, he was a victim of
racism,
Southern racism. Yeah. So, am I going to Savannah? Actually,
it's a really nice place to.
It's beautiful, yeah, but you definitely cool. Like if you stand still for too long, you definitely feel it.
Yeah,
actually, more so because I spent an extensive time in St. Augustine, which is also supposed to be really haunted.
Yeah,
I would say.
Isn't that where Robert's from? Or no?
No, he's from Key West, right?
Oh,
yeah. Sorry.
He's from Key West.
My bad, Robert.
I listened like, who the fuck is Robert? Robert the doll. Robert the doll, like, haunted doll. That? Go back and listen to our two Robert the doll episodes for more details. But
yeah, so St. Augustine is supposed to be super haunted as well, but I just feel like Savannah definitely just has more of a, you just feel it more there for some reason.
Savannah is so haunted that there was a movie that was filmed there called A Savannah Haunting. Come really? On, if y'all need titles, just come see your boy. I mean, just like, what are we going to name it? I don't know, Savannah Haunting. But the set was haunted. Paranormal Activity was happening on the set, and they almost were like, should we even finish this movie?
They were like, oh, you rang? What's up?
I want to make a movie about us.
Cameo starring.
Yeah. They said, actually, as a result, movies that take place in Savannah, like in the script, are actually not shot there. Because specifically.
Because it's so haunted?
Because it's so haunted. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know anything about this movie, A Savannah Haunting, but...
I'm going to bet that it's not very good.
It's about a family that moves to Savannah from California. Who does that? Nobody. Nobody. Savannah, Georgia. Wow. Now, this is one of our cousins you're talking about, too?
Yeah, I told her I wouldn't say her name.
Okay,
podcast,
that's fine. But... you're going to tell me after. So I make fun of her next
time.
She
probably won't care if I say her name. I wouldn't say her name.
Crazy.
Yeah, I was just like, what is going on?
Savannah listeners, if you have ever been to Savannah and got some stories, then please let us know. I'd love to hear some haunted Savannah stories. In fact, Tiffany, you need to tell me that one. You need to write it out for me so I can put it on our YouTube channel.
Well, even better, she sent me a voice recording of her telling me the story.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
So I'll send it to you. Yeah. So I just had to kind of like write down what she told me, but.
Pretty awesome. Okay. Savannah, I give it a thumbs up. I like that. You know, it is an obvious choice, but I mean, it's super haunted. Like the entire city. I mean, it's not like some places, like the place that I'm going to mention is a small location within a city or an area. Like Savannah, the whole damn place is just haunted. And that's pretty.
I don't think I could live there.
Does anybody live there?
What? What do you mean? It's a city.
but I'm saying though, like, who moves to Savannah? Who's like, man, you know what? I'm just going to move to Savannah.
SCAD?
Yeah.
The art school.
Okay, that's right. That's right. I forgot that art school is there. Then that's the only people that live there.
They graduate and stay. Them and the ghost move there.
Hold on real quick. I want to see what the population. I'm looking at the population of Savannah because I'm like, who the hell lives? Okay, it is the oldest city in Georgia. That does not help. It only has a population of 147,000.
Wow. What? That's so low.
Yeah. Now, the metro area, however, is 404,000, which is still low for a metro area, but Savannah proper only has 147,000. That's what I'm saying. Who the hell lives there?
Well, if you go, I mean, there's not a lot of like residential area.
Okay,
like,
that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, and the residential areas are sketchy.
Yeah, they are. Plus, okay, the area
plus for those of you who have never been to Georgia, Georgia is like Atlanta and then everything else.
Yeah.
The Atlanta metro area is essentially the entire state of Georgia. It is 80%+ of the population lives in the
Even if
Atlanta
you just
metro
drive
area.
Like 45 minutes out from Atlanta, the shit is just fucking farmland.
Right. That's when people it's are like, empty. I'm like, oh, where you live? Oh, I live in Atlanta. No, you don't. You don't live in Atlanta.
Smyrna.
Yeah. That's not Atlanta. Quit it. Stop.
Alpharetta.
Okay, Savannah. Wow. All right. Who wants to go next?
I'll go because mine's long.
Well, then let's save yours for last.
Okay.
Okay. Mine's short. Or maybe not.
She has a lot written down.
I do. You know how I roll.
Yeah, Allie does her homework, unlike other people that used to work for this podcast.
Oh!
Who did not do their work.
Shots fired.
All right. So the place that I picked is a place. It is not like a city or region.
It's an amusement park.
No. It is the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know what? I was like writing down places like outside of Savannah, and one of the places I wrote down
yes,
was like
that place
abandoned
kept,
hospitals.
Right. This
and
place
asylums.
Kept popping up over and over, and that's why the more I read about it, I was like, this is the place. Now, I don't think that it's as haunted as Savannah, Georgia, obviously. Or maybe not as haunted as the place I talked about in the intro, the Shanghai Tunnels. But when we talked about this before, when you have a lot of negative energy focused into a single place, I got to think that's got to be a breeding ground for paranormal activity, if such a thing exists.
And we touched on like, I think in Satanic Panic, we talked about Geraldo doing his expose for these places where they would just stick people and forget them and people were abused. And
yes, that was this was definitely one of those places. So a little bit of the normal history of it. It was actually designed to change the way the American mental health care system worked. Prior to this place, these asylums were typically these dark, kind of depressing places. And they decided, and they being people who were followers of philosophies by a man named Thomas Story Kirkbride. He made actually a series of these types of asylums that were called Kirkbrides. And he felt like mental hospitals had to be well lit and have these complex, luxurious architectural designs. He felt like they shouldn't look like hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should look like a place you would want to be if you were suffering from mental illness. So they were like well lit, very, very nice design. In fact, this particular hospital is the second largest hand-cut stone building in the world. The first being the Kremlin in Moscow. So
this was
literally a hand-built building.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was originally built in 1958. It took almost 25 years almost to totally build it.
Wow.
But it was only, here's the thing about it. It was originally designed to hold 250 people. By 1950, it housed 2,600.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's quadruple that, I bet.
So you have a place that was, first of all, was built in the late 1800s or the mid 1800s for 250 people. And now here it is, almost 100 years later, and you've got, 10 times that many people. So, of course, I guess you can see where this is going.
Yeah,
place became overcrowded. There were stories of murders, particularly the patients murdering other patients. workers at the facility would go routinely missing, just gone. And they would search for the person on the grounds and would never find them again.
What the fuck?
Yep.
What?
And probably one of the most horrifying things about this place was that it was kind of like the central hub for lobotomy treatments in the United States.
Oh, God.
And this was one of the facilities where that procedure was done. And, I mean, this place ran all the way till 1994.
Jesus.
Now, there were in the 80s, there were some changes to the way to the mental health care system. And they used to do things like lock people in cages who they could not control, things like that. You know, and eventually people said, hey, you know, we can't do this. This isn't right. So they announced plans to build a new facility, and they did build that facility, and then they closed the Allegheny facility in 1994.
Can you imagine hand cutting that fucking stone and then just like taking a giant shit inside of it and you looking at that building like, motherfuckers.
So here, what's crazy about this place, as if everything else wasn't crazy enough, there was actually an expose written by the Charleston Gazette in 1949 about this place, and it still operated essentially like it did for another 45 years or so.
Jesus.
Said patients were trapped in small rooms. They lived in their own filth. Mm. They had broken chairs and beds. There was no heat in the place. So you take all of those elements, and then you take 2,600 people with mental illness in the same place. I can't imagine, you know, if hell was a real place, it's not. But if it was... I would think that would come pretty close to it. There is a story about two patients that pulled another patient from his bed, and they tried to hang him from the ceiling with his bed sheets to make it look like a suicide. Mm.
Jesus.
But the sheets didn't hold. He fell, and they got upset. So they put his head under a metal bed frame and jumped up and down repeatedly on the bed.
God.
Oh, that looks like suicide, though.
Yeah. Clearly, he killed himself by jumping on the bed with his own head under it.
What, you can't do that?
Yeah. There's a great story in the Washingtonian.com, called I Spent the Night in a Haunted Asylum and I Still Can't Explain What I Saw. He talks about a mysterious flashlight that he saw going through the halls. By the way, this place, you can take tours, you can stay there over the night.
Wait, where is it?
It's in Weston, West Virginia.
Oh, let's go.
No, that's a negative.
No filter.
Yeah, but it's actually...
I don't want to get decapitated by him during the day.
Like, I don't
want to
stay overnight.
Well, you can do a 90-minute daytime tour, a 2-hour nighttime tour, and then a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.
What?
So, oh, God.
And it's only $100 for this.
Yeah, I'd do the daytime one.
And they put you... Actually, you don't do it by yourself. I guess you could. But they put you in a group
of... Who are you trying to impress?
Group of random people.
Who are you trying to impress?
And the pictures from himself. This place... Okay, so, you know... The thing is, they know this place is supposedly haunted, so they don't do a lot to make it look not haunted. You know, there's stuff like old wheelchairs at the end of hallways.
We talked
about that shit just looks scary.
Like, a random wheelchair with nobody in it.
A random ass wheelchair. Like, imagine you walking down a hallway. A long hallway is already scary. Yes. And then you just see a wheelchair roll, like, just out of a room. I'm going home. I'm like, you know, you can keep the fucking $100.
Even there was a time in my last apartment that I saw an empty wheelchair, like, sitting outside of somebody's apartment. And I'm like, well, I hope a miracle happened, you know?
Right, no. Yeah. A miracle did not happen.
Yeah, like, it did not. What the
and
fuck?
Having worked in healthcare for 15 plus years, I saw empty wheelchairs all the time, but it was still... scary in a hospital, like to see supposed to be in it.
Somebody was in this moment.
Exactly. Yeah. You expect a person to be using it, and when they're not, and it moves, like, or it just it's
like I'm not even one of those
place,
people that can like, sit in one and play around. Like, you know how some people I can't do it.
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you a brief story that from this article. He talks about the group he was in. There was a woman named Julia. And he says, Julie and I set up in a room allegedly haunted by a spirit named Jim James. We placed we placed a mag light, a flashlight, on the floor and asked Jim to turn it on. The light was Julia's, but I inspected it and it seemed totally ordinary. A few beats of time passed and then it came on by itself. He says, I then offered Jim a cigarette to turn it back off. It went dark.
Wait, how do you know Jim smoked?
He even says, our guide gave us a couple of cigarettes because she said the spirits liked
Yeah, I guess it's that. Like,
okay, so, man, you know, kind of I'm a cautious skeptic. But if you go in a room with a flashlight that's off and they say, hey, turn this shit on, and it turns on by itself, I'm just gonna assume. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm gonna leave.
Like, you know what?
You guys know I do magic, so I know that there's a trick to everything, right? But
if it's your flashlight,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe they give out trick flashlights. Okay, that's my explanation. I'm sticking with
trick flashlight. You know they do make those though. Like
they
do. You
yeah.
can toggle the switch and make it easy to press.
So, it's kind of weird because I was accused, like soft accused. They didn't say this directly to me. It was a someone had asked a Facebook question. I think you were in this thread too, Allie, about, hey, I need a podcast to listen to. So somebody that wasn't me actually mentioned Disquietude, right?
Was it somebody you knew?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a friend of ours. Like, you should Disquietude. And then somebody made a comment that was essentially like, well, I just hate podcasts that exploit the misfortune of others for profit.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, first of all, there's no profit going on here. Disquietude. So we exploit your misfortunes for fun.
To be clear.
Right, yeah. For our own enjoyment.
For profit.
But a place like the Trans Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, and that's the official name for it. Like they play into that. Hey, a bunch of fucked up shit happened here, so pay us $100 and you can play Ghostbusters for the night. It's like, ooh, that's kind of icky. Imagine if Auschwitz did that.
Oh my god!
Right? Yeah. You can't do that at a. You can't go to a concentration camp.
Which honestly, here's the thing about that mindset that really fucking bothers me is like the same way you can't paint everything with a broad brush, right? You can't say right. that Auschwitz is anything but a memorial for people that suffered something horrible. Like podcasts in general, this is the human experience and this is what we're talking about. There's lots of podcasts that are taking advantage of people, but it's usually pretty apparent when they are.
I'm not knocking this place's hustle because a lot of haunted places do that, but I just kind of feel like, this place should kind of be more like a memorial. I mean,
yeah.
It used to be a hospital.
Honestly, it should be more of a testament to the failings of the American, healthcare.
But hey, for $100, you can get a flashlight that turns on and off by itself. now, this place had 4,000 lobotomies.
Oh, wow. God.
Performed in its time.
That's talked about how horrifying I find lobotomies? Have we discussed
this? For those who don't, I think a lot of people know generally what a lobotomy is, but in short, they damage or remove part of the frontal cortex so that you are still functional.
Yes. So there was a guy, and I can't remember his name because this is all just off the top of my head, but there was a guy. Lobotomies have been performed for a long time, but there was a guy back in, I want to say, the early 1900s.
You're talking about Walter, name?
Whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah.
He started this quick fix lobotomy shit where he would just go in with an ice pick and he would go in through your nasal cavity they did to mummies. Or through your orbital bone in your eye and just jam that shit around and mix up your brain like it's a fucking bowl of jelly. And then just fucking leave. And he would leave people, you know, damaged for life. Essentially, it's brain damage is what it is for the rest of your life. And this was back when women with depression who didn't want to be housewives were considered mentally insane. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they would just do this to anybody.
Yeah, anybody that, you know, you got demons in your blood, lobotomy.
Exactly. So, like, it was so extreme.
And a lot of times people died from the procedure.
Because obviously, he's jamming. He wasn't a doctor is the thing. He wasn't even a doctor. He just figured out how to do that. And then people adopted. Yeah. People adopted that technique across America.
So this place had two expansions. One was after the administrative wing was burnt down by a patient who was probably like, you know what? Fuck this shit.
Good for him.
So they rebuilt it and expanded. And the only other expansion they did was a graveyard. So go figure. It is ranked the number one haunted area in West Virginia, although I'd argue the entire state.
Well, isn't Centralia in West Virginia, right?
I think so.
I don't think that it's technically haunted, but it's really scary.
One of the most common ghosts, besides Jim James, is a girl named Lily. She died from pneumonia at the hospital at the age of 9. They say that if you spend some time in her playroom, you can hear her cries and laughs.
Now, why the fuck would you have a 9-year-old with pneumonia in a fucking... See, man, this shit...
Because she had demons in her blood.
I'm like, this shit makes me so mad.
Yeah, it just... I mean... Yeah. That place is haunted, yeah.
For sure.
That place is beautiful building, absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, really?
It looks like a boarding school, like a really, like you would film some great movies in there. And then like when you walk in there, it looks like a luxury hotel or something, which is it's funny because when you think haunted asylum, that is not what you think. You know, you think of these decrepit old hospitals, but it doesn't look like that because
like the red brick ones.
Right, it was designed to look like a nice place to live because hey, if you're mentally ill, you don't want to live in fucking
It was built with ideals that it totally took a shit on later.
So that's my place. I'm not going there. These pictures of these long hallways just not for me. I don't know. I might would go there if I had a crew of people. $100 not going by myself. Listeners, if anybody has gone by themselves, let me know. I bet nobody's done it. Nobody. All right. So let's take a short break and then we're going to come back with Allie's place. And during the short break, you can hear a word from our sponsor, our only sponsor, Anchor.fm. And we're back. Disquietude. We're talking about what we believe to be the most haunted places in America. Tiffany selected Savannah, Georgia. I selected the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Yes, that is the actual name of the place, not mental health facility. Lunatic Asylum. And we're going to save Allie for last because she did her homework.
I did.
She did her homework.
I read a journal, a haunting journal.
All right.
So, mine takes place in the city of Atchison, Kansas, which apparently is the birthplace of Amelia Earhart.
Really?
Yeah. So they have like a whole Amelia Earhart museum and stuff like that. But also supposedly it is one of the most haunted cities in America. Everything there is super duper old. And apparently the residents all have a lot of ghost stories. But this one in particular.
By the way, Amelia Earhart was eaten by crabs. Continue.
She was eaten by crabs?
What? How?
So some years after she disappeared, and they say that she was never seen again, remains were found on an island some years later that are believed to have skeletal remains that are believed to have been hers. And as the story goes, it appears that this person, whoever these remains belong to, either died of their injuries or, you know, succumbed to starvation or whatever and was eaten by crabs. So,
jeez.
Wait, how far is that from where you were born?
Oh, Atchison?
Yeah.
I was born in Wichita. So I don't know. I've never been to Kansas except for literally except for like the 2 weeks, you know, when I was born there, because our parents, my dad was in the military. So our dad was like, we're getting the hell up out of Kansas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like a fun place to be. No offense.
We went there one time as a kid because our grandparents had lived there. They had a house there. We went and visited them. I remember you might not have been born at this point. I don't know. But I just remember there being snow. That's all I remember.
I didn't even know it snowed there.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Continue.
All right, continue. We're sorry.
Okay. So, for some listeners, they may already know, since I mentioned Atchison, this is not what's the word? This is not an obscure story. So I am talking about the Sally House. And the Sally House was built by a man named M.C. Finney back in the 1800s. And he had a son named Charles Finney, I want to say, who became a doctor, who worked out of the house. And supposedly he was kind of like, so he was a jack of all trades. But at one point he was run out of the town. Which I would have to double check on that. That's a rumor. And the rumor behind Sally is that she was a little girl who came into his practice for appendicitis, and she died on the table, and he could not give her anesthesia because she was so far like in the throes of appendicitis. Her appendix had bursted and that kind of thing.
Yikes.
But this story can't be corroborated anywhere. There's no real historical record. So this is just something that people put on websites to drum up the mystique of the Sally House.
Mm.
So the journal that I read was written by Deborah Pickman when her husband, Tony, and she moved in. It was a rental at the time. So they moved in around 1992, 1993. And they were renting from a cop who had bought the property for like dirt cheap and was renting it out to people, had fixed it up a little bit. So they moved in when Deborah was pregnant. And while they were there, initially just some small things started happening that they thought were unusual. They had a dog that would sit outside of the nursery and bark and like act aggressive towards something unseen in the nursery. When Tony walked into the nursery to see what the dog was barking at, the dog wouldn't follow him in. There were nights where they would be watching television together and one of their lights kept dimming and then getting brighter again on its own. So they were thinking like maybe it has a dimmer switch and something's wrong with it, but they checked it and there was no dimmer switch. There was no reason for that to happen. She bought like an old school like electronic timer for the oven and it kept going off on its own even though no one had touched it. That kind of thing, right? So it all started very, very small. So after she gave birth to her son, he was a newborn. And as anyone who's had a newborn knows that they don't really sleep through the night, right? Like they'll sleep until they're hungry.
They have demons in their blood.
Yes, they do. So they sleep until they're hungry. But her son would wake up like every hour, like on the hour, just constantly waking up, and she had no explanation for it. He wasn't hungry. He didn't need anything. He would eventually go back to sleep, but it was almost like someone was waking him up. Like, she had no explanation for why he would wake up. So she eventually was just super tired. And so when you have family members reaching out when you have a newborn that want to come help you take care of your kid and you're not getting any fucking sleep, you're like, yeah, please, get your ass over here, right? So she had this sister-in-law named Karen that volunteered. Not Karen.
Don't let Karen watch your baby.
Oh, we're about to get a lot of hate mail.
So Karen stayed with him for a week, and while she was there, there was no, like, the baby slept through the night, essentially. It would wake up for feedings, and everything was cool, right? So They were kind of joking with Karen about how they thought maybe they had a ghost because, like, the timer had gone off a couple of times while she was there. And one night when they came home, they noticed that the nursery light was on, but, you know, Deborah had remembered turning that off. Like, that makes no sense. And so they go upstairs to check out the nursery. And Deborah had, like, literally just decorated the nursery, right? Like, she had just put stuffed animals in there. She had taken a long time to put everything together. And all the stuffed animals in the room were positioned in a little circle in the middle of the carpet with their backs towards each other, like a little, like a little cult circle. And they all look at each other and they're like, do you fucking do this? And they're like, no, what? You do that. I didn't do this, right? So everybody's a little freaked out. Everybody's looking at each other suspiciously like, no, I think you did this. Like, this is a joke, right? So they put all the stuffed animals back to where they're supposed to go and everybody left the room, right? And so then they went to go check again after a little while because everybody's super freaked out.
On the floor in the circle.
There was a teddy bear that everyone had remembered specifically being in a rocking chair laying in the middle of the floor. And by this point, everybody's like, okay, who the fuck walked back up here? Like, this isn't funny. Stop. So they pick up the teddy bear, they put it back, and then they head back downstairs. Somebody notices that the light is on in the nursery again. So they all as a crowd head back up the stairs together. And at first everything looked normal. And then Karen gasps and they're like, what? And she was like, there's this big fucking, you know, those beanbag teddy bears that you get from like the carnival that weigh like 15 fucking pounds. She had one of those. You never had like. There are some, like, in the 90s, they were light as hell, but I've seen some that are, like, heavy as shit. So she had one of those, like, propped up on the wall, and Karen was like, didn't you have that facing the room? And they all look, and the teddy bear had turned to where its face was, like, up against the wall, like it was, like, in timeout or some shit. Yeah.
The ghost put him in timeout.
I'm not buying this.
No, it gets... It trust
gets
me.
Better.
This is like this shit plays out like it's a fucking movie. It's wild. So they turn the fucking teddy bear back around. Everyone agrees they're not going in the fucking room. Everyone's super freaked out, right? Then after that, they're telling the story to Tony's brother George. This is days later. They're telling George about it, and George is like, this is a bunch of bullshit. I don't fucking believe it. Whatever, right? So he's talking to his brother, Tony, and this is after they have taken some pictures, some Polaroids of Tony holding the baby, various family members holding the baby, and they could see in all these Polaroids this weird, like, haze around the baby. And it looks like a weird, like, cloud. And they didn't really think much of it at the time.
Because it's a Polaroid and, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that happened in The Sixth Sense. Remember the mom, when she went back and looked at all of her son's pictures, there was, like, this...
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Around him.
But so... Where was I? Okay, so I think his name was George... was like, yeah, okay, whatever, dude, take a picture of that fucking teddy bear that you're so fucking scared of, right? And he's like getting in his brother's face. And so as soon as Tony goes to take a picture, the teddy bear moves on its own, and George practically shits his pants. He's like, what the fuck? I just saw that move. And so, like, Tony's freaking out, they're freaking out. George can't move after he sees this. He's like losing his mind. And he was saying later, like, I don't know if something was holding me there or if it was just fear. I could not move. Wow. And so they're packing up the baby. They're throwing the baby in the car. At this point, Tony feels like a sharp electric pain on his back. And they pull up his shirt later and he has 6-inch bleeding scratches going down his back.
The ghost whipped him.
Maybe. So Tony's mom, who is a Catholic, like to the fucking core, is like, this is a demon. Your house is possessed. You need an exorcism. And she starts calling people because Atchison's kind of a small town, and she's trying to figure out who used to live there before. She knows a friend of a friend who used to rent that house. And so she gets in contact with this person, and it is a woman who had kids in the house. They had lived there probably for the average length of a lease, like a year. And her son would tell her all the time when she would scold him about putting his toys away, he would say, I didn't play with those toys. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's a kid and you kind of ignore it and play it off. But then her daughter, her youngest daughter, also would say some of the same things about, I didn't play with those toys, I shouldn't have to put them away, and had an imaginary friend named Sally that she would play with in the closets of the house, and Sally would tell her to do bad things. Mm. And ever since they moved out of the house, Sally didn't exist anymore.
Wow.
Yep. Never mentioned Sally again. So Deborah gets in contact with a psychic named Barbara, and Barbara tells her that she feels that Sally is a girl between the ages of 5 to 12, and she's very protective over the baby, and she wants to play with the toys and that kind of thing, which is why the toys are moving around so much. And at this point, Sally has also lit candles in the house on her own, which concerns Deborah a lot because
she might burn the fucking house down.
Exactly. It's an old fucking house. Mm-hmm. You might burn the shit down. What are you doing? So Barbara plans to eventually come to the house, but is basically telling Deborah, like, you need to talk to the ghost as if she's a child and scold her when she does something wrong and tell her these are your house rules and she can't disobey the rules.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, it really wasn't. So the night that they speak to Barbara, they're on the phone with Barbara for several hours. And Deborah is like super into this shit, but Tony is not. Tony had an experience when he was a kid where he saw a ghost in his closet, like a bony figure that was staring at him. And he's like super freaked out by ghosts, right?
Tommy is a ghost that lives in our house, by the way.
We talked about him on one of the episodes. I believe
he's been on the podcast.
But yeah, so he doesn't like ghosts. He wants nothing to do with it. Doesn't like that she is now talking to the ghost. It's like just not down with it, right? So then they're going up the stairs to go to bed, and at the end of the staircase they have, you know, just a series of family pictures hanging on the wall, and they notice that one of their pictures, the picture of them, has been flipped upside down inside the frame. So the frame is still hanging the way it's supposed to, but the whole picture is upside down.
Real quick. Okay, so how come when ghosts do shit...
You're ready to say what I'm thinking.
It's physically impossible shit. Like...
like or stuff that doesn't make sense. Like,
right,
like,
yeah.
Why
yeah.
would you flip the picture?
Like, we've all seen Paranormal Activity, the first one.
Yeah.
Remember, there was a scene where she leaves the kitchen. It might have been the second movie. She comes back and all the cabinets are open. Right. That was Sixth Sense.
That was Sixth
Sense. Oh, yeah, yeah.
She leaves the room, she comes back, and all the cabinets are open. And it's like, first of all, no. Like, that's not even... That's not even possible. Second, why?
Oh, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I feel like they always do stuff that just does not make sense.
I still think closing ghosts doors just like fucking with us.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
they can.
Would you not? If you had the ability to move, I am such a fucking troll.
Well, remember in the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze? Mm-hmm. That's like, remember he learned to do that just so he could fuck with the people that killed him. So.
I totally would. Anyway, so there's a lot, honestly. I'm just giving you guys the highlights because this is a journal she kept over a year and a half while they lived there. So there's a fucking lot. So eventually they get Barbara to come visit them to give them, like, her medium reading of everything, and she is conversing with Sally pretty much the whole time. At this point, Deborah had left out crayons and a piece of paper for Sally, just thinking, like, well, you're going to be fucking with all this shit in the house. Maybe you want some kid shit, right? So here you go. And she had written a question on the paper that said, how old are you, Sally? And so Barbara's walking through the house, talking to them, almost in like a childlike voice sometimes, like they're directly communicating with Sally at points. And she brought up the piece of paper without Deborah even mentioning it. And she said that Sally couldn't quite figure out how to get everything to work to write back on the piece of paper. And so Barbara, again, just reiterates, like, you need to set out these house rules, and you need to, like, give her some toys of her own. And then that way you can kind of have
Hell no,
some...
I ain't buying no ghosts no damn toys.
I know. So, like, what she's basically encouraging her to do is give this ghost something to do, right? She's a bored little girl. Give her something to do. She goes back upstairs after a couple of days, and she finds where Sally has answered the question.
Mm.
And she has included it in her book, where you can see this really shaky scrawl where someone has drawn the number 7.
Dang,
on the
page.
Gonna
say 6 in my head.
Yeah. So Sally says she's 7. And Deb gives her these, like, hand-me-down baby dolls from a neighbor, and took a picture of the corner of the room. And when she gets the photos developed, because this is the early 90s, there is this giant blob across all the toys, and it almost, it's like a blue-black cloud.
That's what we found.
Yeah, and it's, she, there was no explanation for it. She took another picture of the crib, and there's one over the crib as well, but it looks so ominous and creepy that she was like, is she fucking pissed off at me? Like, I gave her probably some shit to play with. Is she mad that it's hand-me-down?
Yeah, I was gonna say, you got some secondhand shit from the neighbors. The live kids get the good toys. Yeah.
So that's exactly where her brain went. And she bought a brand new baby doll with, like, a brand new dress, and wrapped it in paper in a box and put it in Sally's corner for Sally to have. And a few days later, she finds the doll sitting inside the crib, her son's crib, but the box is unopened and the wrapping paper was completely untorn.
See, that's another thing. Why do ghosts do physically
how
impossible shit? How?
Just to show you that they can.
Like, how the fuck? How the fuck?
She's like, I'm just gonna reach in and get the dog.
Like, so fucking crazy, right? She, like, what is it? There's a word for it. Transmogrified or whatever the fuck. Pulled this doll from the box, left the box untouched.
Huh.
So later on, Tony's mother comes over because they're kind of renovating the house while they're there because it's old and shitty. And they're talking about, like, putting up wallpaper. They're trying to put wallpaper up in the kitchen. And Deb's in the kitchen. Tony's in the living room. And his mom is by the baby, kind of towards the dining room. And the mom is, like, really bossy, as mother-in-laws are. But she knew, she's staunchly Catholic, like I said, and just does not like the house, doesn't like the energy in the house. And at one point, Tony's sitting on the couch, and their glass oil lamp lifts off the table and starts heading towards his mother, like it's gonna fucking launch at his mom.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and so then he calls out, he's like, Deb! And as soon as he says Deb, he said the oil lamp just dropped on the ground. Like,
wow.
Like, the ghost was scared of the mom.
So let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
How much of this do you think is real? Because, like, okay, we all know the Amityville Horror was a hoax. And they had pretty detailed stories about those hauntings. And
I'll get to it.
Okay.
Because I believe, I don't know if I believe all of it, but I believe that this happened.
Okay. All
right. Okay. And so that happened. And then everything was relatively quiet other than like the regular normal shit. For some reason, Tony is like a focal point, right? And I'll get to that here in a little bit. But Tony worked night shift. Deb was on maternity leave. And then there's a moment where Deb comes off of maternity leave, goes back to work. Mind you, this is all while the baby... So she... If it's an average maternity leave, the baby's only 3 months old at this point. So they've only been there for like 3 months. Mm. She's in a rush. She's going to work. She pulls her clothes out of the dryer and they're like half dried. And she's like, whatever, I gotta go. And Tony gets up to do some household chores, throws everything back in the dryer, and starts trying to vacuum the house.
Wait, sorry, what year did all this happen?
Like 1992,
1993. Oh, okay. I'm like, dryer? In my head, I'm...
You're thinking it's really old.
Right, I'm like, wait, what?
No, no, this was the early 90s. So he throws all the shit, he's trying to vacuum, and often when he would try to vacuum, Sally would flip the switch on him.
Obviously, this story is fake. A man vacuuming? Come on now. In the 90s.
So the ghost would flip the switch all the time and fuck with him while he was trying to clean. But this particular time, it was doing it like a lot, and he was like, fucking stop. Like he started to lose his patience and get angry and start like cursing and yelling at the ghost, like, stop it. Every time he tried to do something and move on to something else, the ghost was like fucking with him, right? And he was like losing his patience. Eventually Deb gets home and he's trying to explain what happened to her, and she's like, huh, that's really weird. I don't know why it was messing with you so hard. And then she starts to try and pull clothes out of the dryer, and she notices all these brown stains all over the clothes.
You know what that is?
The ghost took a shit in the dryer? No, but it's actually really tragic. She had cats, and when he picked the clothes up and put them in the dryer, he didn't notice extra weight. And there was a cat in the dryer.
What?
And she thinks that the ghost was trying to be like, hey, fucking idiot, go turn off the goddamn dryer, you dipshit. You're killing one of your cats.
Like, how do you pick up sheets and not realize there's a cat?
Well, because he's a man doing housework, first of all. He doesn't know, okay?
He thinks
that he's like, this is how much a sheet should weigh.
Oh, yeah. Seems about right. It's really a lot of fighting sheets today. I don't fucking know. God. So, I'm going to, at this point, things kind of start escalating bit by bit, and her journal gets, it's very detailed, but it gets a little scattered in events, because as you'll, like, if any of you guys pick up the journal after this episode, you'll see, like, there are days that go by where, like, nothing really happens, nothing noticeable, but at one point, Tony gets bitten on the leg, and Deborah thinks like he's kidding, and then he lifts up his pants and she can see little teeth marks in his skin where he's been bitten. Tony gets up in the middle of the night to get something to drink, and he goes into the kitchen and he sees a full body apparition of a little girl with like brown hair and like a little blue dress on, standing there staring at him in the kitchen, and he freaks out and he drops his juice, and when he looks down and looks back up, she's gone. There's a friend that came to live with them he stayed with them for a little while. And when he gets home, he was saying that it was almost like Sally followed him home. There was like a mysterious puddle in his floor. He didn't have any leakage. He had no animals. There was no reason for this puddle to be there. He had a fan that was moving on its own. His clothes were moving on their own.
Why would their, their family ghost come home?
I mean,
with
it's
you.
Like the, you know, the Grudge is kind of the same
thing. Yeah.
You go, once you go in the house,
right.
So eventually it gets to be around Christmas time. And
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Before you continue.
Yeah.
What race were these people?
Oh, they were very white. They were very white.
What?
Like the whitest.
Not what I thought you were going to ask.
I mean, because I knew that. You know how I know that? Because my ass would have moved.
People ask them that, but honestly, Deb's only feedback was like, we just didn't have the money to move. you know,
have, look, man, hey, okay.
They would have evicted me.
All right, so we talked about this before on the podcast about why people don't move out of their haunted houses, and I can understand, you know, especially a house like this, old houses like this are actually very expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, they're expensive to maintain, upkeep, and thus expensive to move into. They cost a lot of money, so. You know, you spend your life savings and everything to move into this house. I get it. When the ghost starts biting and scratching, I'm out that bitch. I'm out.
Right.
I'm gone.
Right.
You can sell the house. You sell the house, you live in your car. There's no room for Sally in the car, is all I'm saying. And you move into an apartment or some shit, but I'm not staying there.
No, this is a lot. Like, even for someone like me who would find some of this cool, I don't think, like, it's biting my husband. Like, I don't think I can fucking stay there.
I mean, if I can't fight back, if I don't have a proton pack, you know, or a ghost trap or some shit like that, then I'm not going to.
Well, that's
obviously, if the ghost is fucking you up, it doesn't want you to be there. So, you know what? Leave.
So that's when they were talking to the psychic Barbara. She was saying something about how Sally knew that Deborah was pregnant when they arrived there. Like, the ghost, like, knows too much.
Right. Ghost is mad jealous. Okay.
Like, it's just weird how it doesn't, you can't lock a ghost out of your room. It's just going to come in the fucking room.
Right.
Like,
right.
So at any rate, Christmas comes around. Tony starts wondering if there's more than just Sally in the house. There's still like weird things happening that don't seem to be in line with what a child would do. There's like mysterious fire still in the house. At this point, Deborah has scolded Sally many, many times and threatened to kick her out of the house if she doesn't stop setting fires. And so he's just a little concerned that Sally's not their only problem. So they have a big gathering of people, and while they're having this gathering, again, mysterious fires, things are getting a little out of control. They're worried that Sally is jealous because Santa didn't come for her.
I was getting ready to say, did they not get her?
So they had Santa come especially for the baby and Sally on a second trip because they were afraid that they had
So you doing all this, but you won't move.
Right, right.
You're calling Santa to make the ghost happy.
Yeah.
Hell no.
So, but then they were taking pictures, and when they got the pictures developed from that evening, they could see what they expected, which is the haze around their son. But then they also saw two other apparitions in the background.
Sally called a friend. She's like, look, I got this family that'll do anything for me. Anything. They'll buy me anything you want.
I got a special Santa visit.
Y'all need to come through.
So she's been in touch with Barbara pretty much this whole time. And I can't remember if it's around here that Barbara passes away or if it's later, but at some point she cannot rely on Barbara's feedback anymore because Barbara does.
Because psychics aren't real.
Listen, there's some psychic activity here. They have more than one psychic come in, more than Barbara, and they're, I don't know, dude. But then Tony starts having physical attacks and nightmares. At one point in time, somebody tries to pull him out of bed by the wrist. And he looks down when he like fully comes to, and he's got blisters and burn marks from a tiny hand where someone tried to pull him out of bed. He's getting scratch marks. He's getting bitten, like I said earlier. He can't sleep anymore. He's having episodes like you described where he feels like someone is sitting on top of him. At one point, he has a nightmare where there's some strange, scary woman in the room that's standing on top of him and reaching out for him, and he can't move. He has seen a woman in the house that's not his wife, but looks enough like she's blonde and looks enough like his wife that he thought it was his wife at first, except he knew, like, oh no, she's downstairs. That's
his wife's
her.
Probably like, who is that bitch you was talking to? I thought it was you, babe. I thought it was you.
Yeah.
That's why he's doing housework. He's trying to try to get on the good side because he had this chick over there and told his wife it was a ghost.
Right.
Well, I don't
she
know
looked
her.
Just like you, Barry.
At one point, they see a lightning ball on the stairs. So like a floating orb of light that's just kind of hovering there. And then it disappeared. He went to work one day, which I think he was working at some sort of like metal manufacturing place. And they had this like giant metal door that would seal off the factory. And he said that there was like this really strong gust of wind that like tore through and forced the door open, even though that door weighs like pounds and pounds of, you know, steel. At this point, they're kind of losing their minds, right? Like, they don't know what the fuck is going on. It seems like there's a lot of scary, twisted shit going on. And Tony would later tell his wife that as soon as they moved in, he could hear scratching in the walls. Like, there was just, which he thought was like an animal, like, trying to get out. But it went on for the entire duration that they lived there. He would hear like conversations sometimes at night, and the longer they lived there, the louder they got. And eventually they just kind of cave. And at this point they've become enough of like a local legend to where everyone in their inner circle like knows what the fuck's going on in their house. People would sometimes just show up like knocking on the door like, hey, I came over for dinner, but like, no, you didn't.
You want to see the ghost.
You want to see the ghost.
It's like in Beetlejuice where...
Yeah.
I just want to see the ghost.
Otho drops by. Right. So at this point in time, Unsolved Mysteries is on TV, but then there's like, you know, shows that are like adjacent to that.
Hold on. Tiffany was scared of the Unsolved Mysteries theme.
No,
music.
It wasn't.
We were scared.
America's Most Wanted.
Oh, okay.
It was, I like Unsolved Mysteries scared the shit out of me, and I can watch
America's Most Wanted.
But it's funny, being the person that I am now, all I watch is America's Most Wanted. Well, I don't watch it now, but I watch shows like people getting killed and stuff. But.
I know. I mean, I think that was really for people our age that were into, like, that are into true crime. It was definitely those shows.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I hated, but I love Unsolved Mysteries and Rescue 911. Those are
my shows. I watched that too when I was like a little kid.
Yes, yeah. Love that show.
So they decide that they don't want to go on Unsolved Mysteries because it's too big. But they go on the lesser known sightings. And
I remember that show. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I remember that show too.
My fucking, when I was reading this, I was like, oh shit, my fucking parents watched sightings. Like,
I think it's come on
sightings.
Fox.
It was, something like that. So you can actually find an hour's worth of footage on YouTube of all the clips from sightings.
Does it show Tony getting scratched up?
Yes.
I remember that. Yes. Holy shit.
I
remember that.
No.
You know, when you were talking about it, I was thinking, I remember seeing an episode where dude was getting scratched up by a ghost, and that was
And that's
holy
why
shit.
I'm telling you, I think it's 100% fucking real.
Yes.
Wait, so
okay,
they
I believe you now.
On that episode?
I totally remember that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So sightings came out to their house 4 fucking times. And the first time they came through, Tony was getting scratched to fucking hell. Nobody believed him, right? People would accuse him all the time, like, oh, you did that to yourself. You have that weird condition where you can scratch yourself. It shows up later. And he's like, no, bitches, no. So the next time sightings came, they had a camera pointed right at his stomach where you can watch. There's like 10 minutes of footage. You can watch the ghost fucking scratch him in real time. You can watch the scratch appear. It was to the point where the host of the show, who was a skeptic, was like, okay, I gotta fucking go. I gotta fucking go.
Wow.
And he was, there's a clip on YouTube because I watched it for the podcast.
I've gotta find this.
He's doing an interview with Tony, and he was like, he almost like stops. He's like, you guys have to see this. I'm talking to him. He doesn't even feel this. And I'm watching a scratch appear across his face. A bloody scratch, mind you. This is not
They were like noticeable gashes almost.
And this interview that he did with a host happened after they had moved out. So they move out after a certain point, right? After sightings had been there a couple of times. They move out. when they move, it mostly stops for them. But every time they come back to meet sightings and talk to sightings, he is getting torn the fuck up again every single time.
Sightings, the ghost is mad. Like, y'all don't call the motherfucker. That's like, calling sightings is like calling the police on the ghost. Yeah. Y'all snitched.
So, listeners, watch this footage. It's fucking crazy. No, and it really gives you like some insight into what was happening in their house. Now, behind the scenes, after sightings, things are really fucking ramping up. Like, having sightings there had made things so much worse for them. The ghost was like feeding off of all of this energy from electronics. At one point, while sightings was there, in plain view of everyone, Tony's shirt catches on fire. And they have to...
Poor Tony.
I know. Yeah. They have to stamp out the fire on Tony's back. Which, like, obviously, when you're standing on a staircase with a bunch of, like, Teamsters, everyone can say, like, you didn't fucking light yourself on fire.
Right.
You know? So, behind the scenes, at this point, Tony can't fucking sleep. He's constantly tormented. Every time he, like, starts to drift off to sleep, something wakes him up. It's a scratch. It's a bite. It's, like, people talking to him. It's to the point where Tony is going on, like, weeks and weeks with no sleep now, almost months. And Tony starts losing his mind. He starts hating Deborah constantly. He said it got to the point where every time he walked in the house, he could not have a happy thought. And he knew, like, somewhere in the back of his mind, like, I don't think this is me. I think it's the house. Because he would leave and be, like, a normal person again. But he would get back to the house and it would just be, like, a black hole of hatred, right? And it was the house. It got to the point where he was telling Deborah, like, I think the ghost wants me to kill you. Like, it makes me hate you. And then she was having this other phenomenon where all these things were happening to Tony, but she was just kind of glossing over it and just being like, "Ah, it's fine." Like, it was almost like
the ghost was making her not give a shit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because there were instances in the book where she writes, like, at one point Tony wakes up and he's almost paralyzed on the bed and he's calling for her, and she comes in there and he's like, "Deb, what the fuck?" Like, he can't move. And she's just kind of like, "Oh, you're fine. Like, it's fine. Just, you know, let it pass and you'll be fine." Like, she's just ignoring what Tony is going through, basically. And there was one point he was saying where he, trigger warning for cat lovers, but this is the second cat issue with this guy. He had gotten deranged and he was sitting on the couch one morning eating his cereal, and he put his bowl of milk by the sink, and he comes back and there's some strange cat that had somehow worked its way into the house, as some cats are known to do, and he stabbed this cat to death because he knew that his wife loved cats and he was thinking he was gonna leave it there for her to find, and in her shock and horror at finding this dead cat, he was gonna cut her throat. And he had, like, plotted this all out in his head, right?
So Luca Magnana.
I know, right? I was thinking that.
So then he goes to pick up his son, who was at his parents' house, gets back to the house and was like, "Oh, what the fuck is wrong with me? I can't kill my wife. Why the fuck did I kill a cat?" Like, he's just like, so he cleans up the murder scene. And, you know, I think that was, like, one of the final things that happened in the house with him. But the very last straw for him, and the one that finally got through to Deb, was when I think he told her about the cat later. I think he kept that secret for a while. But he was getting out of bed one morning to go downstairs, and something kicked him so hard in the back that he almost fell off the stairs. And he broke.
Just imagine the ghost, like,
I know.
Black monk of Pontefract. Right. Yeah.
And so, like, he broke, like, three rungs trying to catch himself. And that's when they finally decided to move the fuck out of the house. But yeah, every time they came back to converse with sightings, he would get fucked up again. And they've gone back. I didn't watch this because I hate ghost adventures, but they've gone back with ghost adventures. They've gone back to try and, like, find answers for themselves. They tried to do an exorcism with what they were calling a Native American shaman, but her description really just made it sound like a white lady in some leather. Right. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm not sure about that. But she was, like, trying to do this exorcism, and she told them that there were three people in the house. She said that there was a man who, she called him a gentleman, and he kind of left. Like, so she's in the middle of this exorcism, and she's like, just imagine, like, a white cleansing light. And she said that the guy was like, why do I have to go? He was kind of like, I don't want to fucking go. But he wasn't, like, there to harm anyone. He just didn't quite get why he needed to leave. But then he left and went into the light. And then she said that the woman, the one that Tony had been seeing, was, like, really fighting them on leaving, would not leave. But when it came down to Sally, Deb would not let Sally go. And she said that she really just felt like Sally was a little girl stuck in the house, and she felt all this emotion for Sally. And it got to the point where, I didn't mention this before, but they could both feel the emotions of Sally. Like, she would almost feel when Sally was, like, mad with someone. And then if you think about that same logic with Tony, like, is he then feeling Sally's emotion? When basically my theory behind the whole thing, especially after rereading some of it for the podcast, I think Sally was always something demonic, and it presented itself as a little girl,
right? Yeah.
And it's, but there have been so many mediums, there are even ones on sightings that come through and see her as a little girl, and they talk to her as a little girl. And there's even one, I think his name was Peter, who felt another presence there, like a darker presence that was, like, really combative with him. And it makes me wonder if it's not all the same thing. I don't know. It's really tricky and confusing, but I definitely think that whatever is there is demonic. And there are people to this day that go to the Sally house and have paranormal, you know, things that happen to them, people that have gotten scratched that aren't Tony.
I did read that, that the Sally house, particularly men, it's really whatever, it's very hostile towards men.
Yeah.
So that's, first of all, why isn't this a movie?
Honestly, I think they made, like, a shitty one, but
I'm sure. Yeah.
It needs to, well, yeah, I mean, honestly, and it's parallels the story of Amityville Horror so well, especially with Tony, except that there's corroborating evidence.
That might be some of the reason why, you know, Hollywood hasn't latched onto it, because producers are probably like, it's Amityville Horror. But, wow, that's crazy. I would love to actually see. I don't know if you guys ever have watched The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Great show. I would, this would, that style of,
oh yeah, that
show
would
work well for,
but yeah,
for
that's, stories. I was sucked into this journal for so long because she, like I said, it goes on for a year and a half. There's a lot in it. I glossed over a lot of this stuff. But there's, like, so much that happens to this couple, and it's just insane that somebody lived there for that long, and it's documented, and you would think that it's bullshit, except there's, you know, there's so much evidence out right, there to show that it's not.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. That's a very good haunting, especially in America, where hauntings tend to be kind of
loosey-goosey.
Mundane, yeah. You know, when the ghosts get to the point where they are physically interacting with people.
Yeah.
You know, we know that poltergeists physically interact with objects.
Yeah.
Just a picture of them.
Yes, the stuffed animals sitting in a circle.
But when ghosts are interacting with people, which is kind of rare. Very rarely hear that. You know, we know the Black Monk, but he lives in the UK. And besides that, there are no other cases really that I can think of off the top of my head in which the ghosts fuck people up. So
yeah, I do know somebody personally that has told me their haunting experience, which I had hoped to one day get him on the show. But he told me about growing up in a house where they had this old radio, the kind that you would have to like physically get up and plug in for it to cut on, and it would cut on all the time on its own without being plugged in. He said there was one incident where he and his sisters were in like a screaming match with each other, and an old heavy lamp picked itself up off the table and smashed itself on the wall. Like, it's not completely unheard of, these little things, but for them to all happen at once to one family is like fucking crazy.
That's good story. That's a really good one. Of course, I'm gonna go back and watch that episode of Sightings.
I know, right?
I have not seen it. 25, almost 30 years ago, but I vividly remember that. And when you were telling me the story, especially when you got the part of the scratches, I thought, I wonder if that's the same.
Wow.
You know, but I didn't remember that it was from the show Sightings. I just remembered a TV show which had a haunting that, and wow, that's pretty crazy. Wow.
Yeah, dude. Fucking wild. I really feel bad for those people, but also I don't,
and I tell you why. Y'all know what I'm gonna say. You fucking stay there. You should have moved.
I don't know, because I feel like I can see myself in her situation where I'd be in denial of it. I don't know if I would be in denial that much.
You know, I think though, the ghost manipulated old Deb.
Yeah, for sure.
She thought this is a sad little girl. She probably heard the history of the, you know, the Sally house. The little girl died.
Well, yeah, she was actually trying to research the whole time that they lived there, and they kept finding little dead Sallys, but none of them aligned with her Sally.
Right.
And then Sightings, I think, tried to pin it on a woman named Sally Hall, but turns out that was a woman who did live in the house at one point in time with the Finney family, but she was a grown woman. So there's no Sally. She's been digging for decades and has never found a child that fits Sally's description, which almost says to me, yeah, this is a fucking demon.
Sally Wildin. That's crazy. But I still would have got the fuck out of there. As I say this, as we live in a house that has all kinds of stupid shit happening.
That
should have
been on our list of ones.
But you know what? I mean, so here's the thing. I mean, I think that you could coexist in a haunted house as long as it's not, you know, as long as it's Tommy is not waking me up at fucking 2 a.m. because I got to be at work at 8. You know, I'm fine. He can do whatever the fuck he wants. But you start scratching and kicking me and shit, or, you know, showing your face while I'm trying to get some milk out the fridge at 3 a.m. Now we got problems, dude. And I just don't want to live here no more. But wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So, listeners, if you have a place that you think is scarier, please tell us about it. As far as the scariest place in America, I think Savannah, Georgia, like, kind of ticks all the boxes, but it's like a city.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, as far as a single place, it's hard to say. I think the Sally House is pretty up there.
Yeah.
Mainly because, you know, we've got evidence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that any place that does a tour that lets you do like, I'm kind of, even though I picked the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, it's kind of like, because I just feel like those places are going to do things secretly to make sure you get your money's worth.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like trick flashlights. Now, we do know that the Black Monk of Pontefract, now, I would have picked that, but that is not in the United States. It's in the UK. And they claim, you know, they don't do anything. And they even say, you might spend the night and nothing fucking happens.
Yeah.
And it's a very small house. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Sally House or a lunatic asylum. It's a very small, it's like a, what they call a flat. It's just a small flat. And, you know, you might go in there and get punched down the stairs by a fucking monk. That's very weird. So, the Sally House reminds me most of the Black Monk haunting.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, what's weird about
going on a field trip there?
No, absolutely not.
I would.
Yeah,
I couldn't go. I'm telling you,
I don't want to.
You couldn't, but we probably could. Yeah.
I shouldn't joke like this. But if a ghost scratched me, I'm gonna kill myself just so we can fight in the afterlife. I'm not gonna let you get away with that. you're just gonna scratch me because I'm living and you're not. No, we can even things up. No,
I kind of would want the experience, but at the same time, like, it follows people, and I
you might
get,
come home and
like
the ghost packed his bags. And
yeah,
came
no,
back
thank
with you.
You. That's so, Sally did follow them to another house when they were staying with relatives and fucked with some shit there. But then Barbara told him that she got bored and went home.
I wonder why ghosts do that. Like, when you move, they move with you.
I don't see. That's the only part of the story that kind of triggers my skeptic antenna, because if you think about why a ghost would exist in the first place, if they do. And normally the reason ghosts haunt a particular area or a place is because there's something that ties them to that
right.
place. Some kind of negative energy that.
Supposedly, but then so.
Because why wouldn't ghosts just be all around?
Well, so I'll say specifically for Sally, I don't think Sally is a traditional ghost in any sense of the word. I think she's
a demon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even really, not to get all weird on the podcast, but I don't really believe in demons anyway. But I feel like she's more of like a powerful, dark energy, right? And that can hang on to you. There's lots of stories of people that went on like a ghost tour and went home and had like a weird interaction where someone was at the end of their bed and shit like right. that. Like, they do tag along sometimes. That's a thing. So I don't know.
That's why your boy's not going on any ghost tours.
But there's a bunch of different types of hauntings, right? And like, there's a lot of shit on the internet that I think is utter bullshit, but there are like, there's enough to where I think you could logically say that there's like a haunting, what people would call like a dumb haunting, where it's just like a replay of something that happened in time.
Right.
And you can't really, it's not interactive. It's just something like right. someone goes up and down the stairs kind of thing. But then there are like these quote unquote smart hauntings similar to Sally, where it's something that is interacting with the environment and interacting with people. And so I think there's, that would be what would cling on to you and follow you somewhere, not necessarily.
See, here's the weird thing. Like, I'm a cautious skeptic and I want to know, but at the same time, I don't want to know. I don't want to find out. And I say this like, because even the stuff that happens at our house, I just kind of brush it off like, that's bullshit. That's not. Even though the lights turned on and off by themselves multiple times, that's nothing. But it's like, you know, to get to a level of haunting like the Sally house.
Yeah.
Like, I'd kind of want to see that, because then that that kind of confirms, okay, this shit is real. But
so one thing that I was taught from a very young age, and I don't know if this goes across, basically I had a lot of like witchy people in my family growing up, and it's like, you don't pay attention to what's happening. If something like that happens, you don't give it a name, you don't talk to it, you basically ignore it, because the more energy you give it, the stronger it becomes.
That's true. Yeah.
And so like,
I do think if ghosts do exist, they exist because of energy. I mean, I know that's a very vague term to use, but that's the best way we can all describe it. I mean, we know that the energy is a real physical thing. And I think that it can exist across different planes. And I mean, it's kind of like the old Freddy Krueger thing. You know, how, for those of you horror connoisseurs that have seen Freddy versus Jason, if you remember, the whole premise of that movie is that Freddy Krueger has no power because no one believes him anymore. No one's scared of him.
Right.
So he can't kill kids. So he brings Jason from hell to kill kids so that they think Freddy's back. But it's kind of, it's that same principle. He needs that negative energy in his case. Fear.
But that it explains why when, you know, they would have big gatherings, shit would happen, or when they had sightings there, all the energy that it was pulling off of batteries and people and shit. Like, they said that they would wrap up their sightings filmings and Tony would look like a fucking scratching post. Like, he was just mauled. And then one time, and they even caught this on sightings, and this was a moment that I had in the car, just kind of brushing up on the story again for the podcast. They caught the initials MC carved into his back. And then I remembered that the guy who built the fucking house was MC Finney. How the fuck?
Why does that sound like?
How
like
the fuck a does a
MC Finney?
MC Finney. But how the fuck does that ghost know who built the house? Like that
doesn't because they've
been
seem,
there.
Doesn't
right?
that seem kind of on the nose? It does, though? Right?
But it's so fucking weird. Like, I mean, I don't think that he scratched it into his own back. Like,
well, once again, this is goes back to the conversation of ghosts doing pointless things. Like, why would they?
I
would
have called
the initials in
James
his back?
Randi. Do you guys know who James Randi?
No.
Was. Oh, we're going to do an episode on Project Alpha one time. Okay. I'm not going to tell you what Project Alpha is because we'll save that for the episode. Project Alpha is one of the greatest scientific experiments ever made. But James Randi was a very, very good magician, but he was like a world-renowned skeptic. You ever seen the movie Now You See Me? Remember Morgan Freeman's character was a guy who followed magicians around and debunked their shit? That was what James...
I think I saw it like
so that was what James Randi did. Okay. Because he was a magician, he knew that magic was bullshit. And really, he spent his time debunking psychics or people like John Edwards or people like that. So he had something called the James Randi Foundation. James Randi... I think it was just called the James Randi Foundation. But whatever the case, it was... He had a challenge. He would give you $1 million. He had a bank account.
I think that, I've heard of this.
Yeah, that had $1 million in it that he never touched. That if you could prove...
But like, yeah.
Under conditions that he set. That was the thing. If you could prove... if you could prove either paranormal activity, extrasensory perception, supernatural abilities, any of those things, you could prove it, he would just give you this $1 million.
Yeah.
And
I think I remember hearing about this guy.
Yeah, no one ever took him up on his challenge, and he directly challenged people like John Edwards and Shirley MacLaine, and they famously turned him down. Like, well, John Edwards don't need $1 million. You know what I'm saying? So,
but also he would desperately fail.
Oh yeah, of course he would. Cause James, people like James Randi know they got people like John Edwards is bullshit. So I'm like, I would have called it James Randi to see, because if James Randi said, you know what, I'm going to give these motherfuckers $1 million. And then I'm like, okay, all right. By the way, James Randi passed away a few years ago, but his challenge still stands. His estate and his family have said, the challenge still stands. So listeners, if you want to make a cool $1 million, all you got to do is call James Randi people and convince them that you can move things with your mind.
I bet if somebody wins, he like, his ghost appears and is like, bullshit. Yeah. Give me my fucking
money. Give my money back.
I'm like, no, he would scratch that in their back.
Oh boy. Okay. I think that's good. That's enough for our listeners to chew on for Halloween. That's some good stuff. Good, spooky. good choices, ladies. I like those. Real quick, I forgot to note this at the beginning. The intro is actually, I read from an article from a website called Only in Your State by Tessa Metcalf. I will always want to make sure if I read something that I did not write that I give that, because I know that internet land is very vicious and savage, and someone on Reddit will be he didn't write that. No, I did not write this. Somebody else did, and I read it. She's a very good writer, by the way. That was a great article. So, all right, that's gonna do it for this week. In disquietude, we're gonna try and cram. Let's see, today's the 20th. We're gonna try and cram in. Should we try and cram in one more spoopy episode for October?
I live for this shit.
Because the next episode after, all right, so I don't know what next week's episode is going to be. We'll talk about that off air. But the episode after that, we're going to talk about something called Steve's Motel. That's all I'm going to say. Listeners, don't go looking it up, but y'all will, because that's how y'all do. The idea was given to me by a friend who grew up in the area that it happened and was like, dude, have you ever heard about Steve's Motel? And I'm like, no. And I started reading about this and I was like, holy shit, we are doing an episode on Steve's Motel. Okay. Steve's Motel, correct. Just one of those. I know it's kind of true crimey, and we try and stay away from true crime as much as possible here in Disquietude, but this is good shit, y'all. So, before we get to Steve's Motel, next week we're going to do something. We promise it will be good. We're going to send Halloween out on a bang. So you guys can have something spoopy to listen to while you're giving out candy that has drugs in it to kids, because we all know that's what
happens.
That's what we do. Yes,
please hand your very expensive edibles.
Yes,
right.
Just give them out to kids. Maybe that's what we should do next week's episode on. Urban legends around Halloween.
Ooh.
Okay.
Because there are a lot.
Yeah.
Because even though we all know that shit never happens, but I know your parents. I know your mom candy. Personally. I know she checked your Halloween candy.
You were supposed to smash everything. Make sure
right. Like our parents
blade.
Checked yeah, our Halloween candy.
But they were eating it along the
yeah.
way.
Right, yeah. They would dump it all on the table. And they were like okay. Oh,
no. I got to make sure the Snickers doesn't happen.
Right, yeah. But there is always some truth in every urban right. legend. And there's a little bit of truth in this one. So we'll talk about that.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that. About that next week. I think that'll be a good way to send out Halloween. So, once again, thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as we enjoyed making it. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, Disquietude, Instagram, Disquietude Pod, YouTube, Disquietude Stories, or go to our website, www.disquietude.net. Do not spam call my phone. I get a lot of spam calls because... my phone number is on the website because if someone wants to get a hold of me, that's fine. But I get a lot of spam calls. If you are a spammer, fuck you. I hate you.
And we're gonna give you razor blade candy, bitch.
Yeah, actually, no. I got a nice house you can stay at. I'll pay. I'll pay.
It's an Atchison candy,
right?
Yep. I introduced you to a friend of mine, Sally, sweetest little girl you ever met. So that'll do it for us this week. Hopefully, you hear our lovely voices again next week.
Bye.